And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, hello, la la la. Feel like it's been a while. July 3rd? Today's the 15th? That's a while in radio time.
You missed a pay period. You were gone for a pay period, essentially.
Well, good to be back. Just tell my wife last night that when we go on vacation, this was more of a staycation. To me, the worst thing in the world, no matter how much you love your job, is to like take a plane flight and you get back at like 8:40, and then by the time you get home, it's like 11 o'clock, and you go to bed, and you got to wake up, and it's like, blah, 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 blah. You're back. So we usually, if we travel, get back on Saturday to take a day. And then I was like, yesterday, I'm like, well, I feel like when you do this, I mentioned it on Twitter Saturday, that your vacation is officially over when you start thinking and taking notes for your next show. Because I didn't do that all week long, actually. Well, first of all, thanks to Nick and Sam for critically acclaimed bang up job.
Wow. Really? Which critics?
What did they my claim? Knucklehead friends and listeners who know me and got in touch with me all week. First of all, even though we were talking about it, it's kind of a downtime for radio. And a couple of my guys were listening and they were like, was this a new guy on CBS? And they were like, heard your name and just like in for Steve, and it's like, whoa, somebody else is doing the show.
I think I said on Twitter afterwards, I'm retiring, hanging up the headphones as host, and I'm gonna go down as a top three host of Crunch Time and Sports
Ever.
Talk all time. Top three.
There you go. Costanza exiting on a high note.
I think the one thing that you missed that was probably the most shocking thing that happened during the week, it wasn't the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook trade. It was Fred called in on the cleanest, clearest phone line
I
have ever heard in my... It lasted for like 5 or 6 words, and then all of a sudden it was like back to like Fred was like out in the middle of nowhere or whatever. But I didn't think it was the same Fred who called in because the call was so clear.
Because you could actually hear it? It wasn't a flip phone?
It was crystal clear. You could hear him. There was nothing else. It was like he was in a recording studio using a microphone calling in for about 35 seconds.
It was like he was back on his U.S. West carrier, which went out of business like 16 years ago. But anyway, so the key was a couple of people asked, so how do you feel about having, not just doing the national thing? I was like, how do I feel about it? It's like, yeah, guys who, especially in your case, you've been sitting here doing the show for years. And first of all, kudos for stepping up and not only wanting to fill in and host for the first time, but literally when there's nothing going on. I guess on Monday you got to talk about the World Cup, which is huge.
Monday we didn't have the show because
Did you do a carryover World Cup conversation?
Yeah, so talked about the World Cup, talked about the Home Run Derby, made fun of people who don't understand brackets because of the Home Run Derby, because everybody wanted Vlad Guerrero to be the Home Run Derby champion because he hit more home runs, forgetting that that's not how brackets work.
Right.
So I made fun of them. Sam and I did like an all-star game bet, which he still has to pay up on.
What was the wager?
We did like a fantasy draft and then create your best team with hitters and pitchers and whoever won the most categories or whatever. And then loser has to actually use this little LA Dodgers baseball cap that one of the callers dropped off. We're going to fill it with ice cream. Yeah, and you have to wear it on your head, let the ice cream melt a little bit, and then you have to eat the ice cream.
Wow.
So we're just waiting on ice cream.
What kind? I'd be happy to buy the ice cream.
That's the thing. Sam, who's working on a project next door, he's like, oh, yeah, whatever's fine. I was definitely thinking something with, like, swirls of chocolate and peanut butter in it or something. So that is, as it kind of melts, it gets a little sticky and syrupy. But he said he'll eat anything. So I don't know if you want to punish him and make him eat coffee ice cream or Brady's avocado ice cream.
That's
if
against
that'll
the
even
Geneva
melt.
Convention. Coffee
that's
ice cream.
A little too far.
That's just the worst thing in the world. So it'd be funny because all of a sudden I would, first of all, there's no context. One of the things is when I've left, God, it was years ago. Well, obviously, when I was working with Justin and I left, he would just host the show by himself. Then when I was at the other place, I remember I took a vacation and we let, first it was somebody who was then the sports director at KEZI did the show. Then it was Dave Wendo when he worked at KMTR. And then and I was like in another part of the country, so I wasn't listening. But I literally, the times I've spent here, I, you know, it's not like I was listening in, be like, no. It's like, to be perfectly honest, it's like, as hard as you guys work, as much as you guys know, I was like, they'll figure it out. They'll do fine. It was confidence level high.
I've only been, you know, sitting in the same room listening to the show for like three and a half years now. I think I kind of understand how it works.
And, you know, all of a sudden I'd get a tweet or a text as if I were listening. Did you hear or sports talk? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because the two times that we got a chance to listen, I was driving back either to or from. No, it had to be from the golf course. And it was awesome. You guys kill. And I appreciate it. Did you come up with anything? Because I know you guys were willing to try, and you talked about a lot.
Oh, what
did you come up with
about,
something
Steve?
That needs to stick?
Oh,
you know what I mean. As far as segments or ideas you came up with that you felt went over, you were that were funny, interesting, compelling, and that we need to consider making permanent.
The only thing I could come up with was for Thursday, which was coming off of the deadest sports day of the year, Wednesday.
Right, Wednesday after the All-Star.
I tried to come up with two things. One, I tried to come up with the Crunchies, where we do essentially our version of the ESPYs, where we give out sports awards. And then I kept running out of time during segments to actually get to the Crunchies, and then I was directly competing with the ESPYs, and I was like, it's not going so well. And then we just talked about cornhole. The other one was what ended up being Make You Mad Thursday, where I brought up all of the dumb debates that you hate having that you've called me a fascist and a communist for liking, like putting ketchup on hot dogs and pineapple on pizza. And so we got some good debates about, and basically I was just going for maybe not Make You Mad Thursday, but just like the dumbest debates that you've gotten into with your friends.
All right, I did catch up on that.
Okay, yeah.
Which, I don't know, with my friends, is there even ever an intelligent debate? Maybe it's everything that's ever been debated among us idiots.
Well, I was looking for non-sports debates because there's no sports happening, so there's nothing to talk about until, like, basically the Russell Westbrook-Chris Paul trade happened. And everything before then was just like, hey, here's a bunch of dumb things that I have to say. And Sam and I just had a lot of fun. We had some textures, you know, call
what
in and stuff like
the,
that.
What was the winner? I mean, what were some of the most completely pointless, idiotic debates ever?
Well, there's one that my friends and I have had that I tried to bring up that didn't catch on so much on air, but it did off air when I was asking people around the office. Who would win in a fight, a grizzly bear or a silverback gorilla?
Wow.
Right. And then another one was actually when I threw it out on Twitter, somebody brought this up. It was at Jeromney brought it up. When does a pizza become a pizza? When you're making a pizza, when does it become a pizza?
Well, you start with the dough.
Right.
And then the sauce.
Sure.
I think that the next step, right? It has to be because at that point, it's focaccia bread with sauce. It's not pizza. It doesn't have any topping on it.
So it's the third thing, essentially.
I would say the third thing.
Okay, because we were trying to debate, is it just the cheese? If you put cheese on bread, but that's cheesy bread. Oh, we got into it. That took up like 30 minutes of the
really?
4 o'clock. Oh, it just Sam and I being dumb with each other.
That's a classic sports talk digression then. Oh, yeah. It's right up the alley. All right, let me see. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. That's the way to go. 284-8571. You could also text us 321. 0824. You could try us on Twitter at 953. The score for the station, for me, it's at Sports Talk 953. For sometimes host, most time producer, Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. Yeah, I think somebody texted me about pineapple on pizza.
That was another debate that we had as well. Right. I'm okay with it as long as it's the right pizza. Like, you can't just, you know, have a margarita pizza and like, yeah, we'll have pineapples on it. Like, no, that obviously doesn't work. But when you have the Canadian bacon on the pizza and everything salty and heavy, and then you get this burst of pineapple that's so fruity and delicious. Oh,
too fruity.
It's spectacular. Also, how do you define a sandwich? It's a hot dog a sandwich. Where do we go to here?
If it was a sandwich, wouldn't it be called a hot dog sandwich?
Maybe.
I mean, did you order a BLT? It's a sandwich. It's under the thing that says sandwiches.
But isn't it, but it's meat between bread. Is that just...
Is it really between it, or is it more resting? So this is on the idiot debate.
Yes. So that was something Sam and I talked about.
You just proved
as well.
Your point. It's that idiotic.
I know. I think I was on board. It wasn't a sandwich. Also, we found out about how reputable Wikipedia was as a source for all of these things, because that's where I went to with all of my information. Was just like, according to Wikipedia, technically a hot dog.
You could also hack into Wikipedia, and you see that after like a politician or a celebrity does something stupid, and you know they mock up their resume.
Right. So last Thursday morning, according to Wikipedia, a hot dog was not a sandwich, but maybe on Friday it was. I don't know.
Yeah, that was it. One of my buddies texted me with Nick's philosophy of bacon countering the taste of the pineapple, and he just basically went dot, 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 still not buying. All right, 284-8571. Your Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take our first call of the what a week I'm having and bring in the other Steve. How you doing, Steve?
I'm fine. A couple of quick comments before I ask my question. Pineapple on pizza? Never. As far as... a sandwich, what it is, well, it was defined by the Earl of Sandwich many moons ago, several hundred years ago, when he contrived of slicing some bread and throwing some meat in between the two slices of bread, and so they named it after him.
Okay.
So that's that. If it's meat in between two pieces of bread, it's a sandwich, period. I don't care what you say. Anyway, all that foolishness aside... I was really disappointed last week, though not surprised in the slightest, to see that Austin Meek has flown a coop.
Yeah, he's covering Michigan now for The Athletic.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, obviously you got a healthy bump in pay, and it's understandable, but I always felt that... a person of his talents, just there's no way he was going to stick around here forever, because he was a very bright light and a very, very observant and thoughtful writer. And his prose, as it was printed, was just marvelous to read. I never missed his column, and I am, especially since this newspaper seems intent on slowly shutting itself down. That's a whole other subject, I guess.
Yeah, it is. Well, the newspaper industry, obviously.
Oh, I know.
It's firm footing every day.
I'm aware of that. I subscribe, on a personal note, I subscribe online to New York Times, Washington Post, and the L.A. Times, just to do what little I can to help... that cause, and that's about it.
No, I always said, my three columnists have been Bellamy, then Schroeder, and then Meek here. Right. And, you know, when I incorporate now with Thorburn, then it was Mosley, Chris Hansen, and Steve Mims, and, you know, the Curtis Anderson, who used to do a great job covering track and field and other things. Being a newspaper junkie, I've always felt pound for pound, the Register Guard was awesome. You know, obviously they've had to have cutbacks, and, you know, the family sold it, and they changed the format, and, you know, trying to keep up with the times.
I know. It is a sad situation, and I don't know. There's so many things, in at least in my life, that seem to be diminished or disappearing or in serious trouble, and newspapers, horse racing, baseball, you name it, boxing.
Boxing. I was going to say, you know, there was a time, I would say even into the early 80s, when, you know, before football completely took over the world.
Right, right. Well, how a coward these days, I can't listen to his show anymore. It's NBA every day, all the time, and little else. He'll get on with the professional football and football season when it comes along, but those are the only two things he ever talks about anymore.
Yeah, and I haven't listened to Coward since he left ESPN, to be perfectly honest.
Well, it's been a sad sad journey for him too. So anyway,
to end up at Fox.
But again, pizza, pineapple, never.
All right,
see you later.
We're casting your ballot, Steve. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Hey, here's one. I have a vivid memory of growing up in Jersey, and not just growing up, you know, being like a person. I'm wondering, did the Canadian bacon slash pineapple pizza, because that's really what it was. Nobody just decided to put pineapple on a pizza. It came in concert. I'm wondering if that was like one of the major chains that started it.
Well, it's called the Hawaiian pizza.
That's right. That's right.
It's just, you know, it's pineapple with Canadian bacon.
I had never heard of it.
You won't say ham.
At a certain point. And I'm just trying to think. I don't know how long Papa John's been in business. Was the original Little Caesars, Illich, who owned the Red Wings and the Tigers, was it Domino's? Fast food, the first chain was McDonald's.
Right, yeah. I would think with pizzas, though, they would stick with their cheese, pepperoni.
Pepperoni's
and then,
a staple.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be. Like, pineapple wouldn't work on a pepperoni pizza because the pepperoni as a meat is too strong and overpowering. So, but the ham is salty sweet.
So
it goes
basically,
with the pineapple.
I'm looking for somebody to scapegoat here.
Yeah, kind
you
of,
know,
probably.
Who started this?
It could just be, you know, the Hawaiians living on an island where
with pineapple.
Yeah, where pineapple, you know, is just a thing. That's around.
All these years, knowing it was Hawaiian, I never put two and two together that, that's where they make the pineapple.
Wow. All
wow.
All right,
so that just took a turn. you know, I was going to bring up our next caller, but first let's get to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and welcome in Josh. Josh, how's it going?
Hey, good, Steve. First of all, my grandmother was 100% Hawaiian. She's sitting over her grave if anybody put canned pineapple on anything.
Canned pineapple.
Yeah. That's what most pineapple, Hawaiian pizza is canned pineapple. So that's just a travesty to most Hawaiians to do that. So.
By the way, before you get to your question, Josh, on your Facebook page, he posted a license plate. It's an Oregon Rip City license plate that says Lakers. And I was just confused. Whatever became of that? What do you make of that?
I don't know. I saw it in the Costco parking lot. The best explanation that I got was it somebody that was associated with Lake Oswego High School. That's the only thing. But even then, they're an idiot for doing that. Either that or the ultimate troll on the planet, because I saw that and, you know, I don't know. It bothered me all day long. I couldn't believe it.
I've brought it up to like seven or eight people, and one person who's from Portland said, are they from Lake Oswego? And I was like, that's the only explanation I've heard that makes any sense.
But even if you're from Lake Oswego and you went there and you were a Blazer fan, don't you think you'd think twice before you just put Lakers on a personalized plate.
Absolutely.
I just that person is clearly not thinking right. It was bad enough that I saw it driving through the parking lot, and this is Costco parking lot. I had to pull over and park to get out and take a picture of that. I was like, it bothered me so bad.
That's a good effort.
Yeah. Speaking of the Blazers, though, I was going to tell your audience who is of the gambling nature to go out and put all your money on the over-under for the Blazers in Vegas this year because they totally disrespected Portland again. They had them at 43.5 wins, and they got better. And enough people must have bet on it, too, because it was 43.5 this morning, now it's 45.5. So they've got a lot of action on it, apparently. Yeah, it jumped up. But, I mean, I don't know how you could win 53 games last year, become better over the offseason, and they predict you to win less games. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. I got to check that out. I think there's just so many people that are all in for the L.A. teams and Denver coming back improved. I think there's some overlooking going on as we speak.
Well, they've done it the last 3 years to Portland. They've had them at like 42, 43 wins, and they've exceeded it every year. So to me, it's been the most easiest, obvious bet to make if you're in Vegas, especially because I really feel like even though a lot of the teams upgraded, they upgraded as well, and there's not one dominant team out there. I think you're going to see a lot of teams in the high 40s, low 50s this year.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. I agree. And appreciate the call, as always, Josh. So he posts the license, the picture, like he said, he got to the parking lot. I could picture him saying, don't lose that car. I've got to take a picture of this. And it's like, all right. It's not just an Oregon license plate, which, you know, there's a lot of Laker fans in Oregon. There's a lot of Laker fans in every state. They're a pretty popular team. But the fact that the guy had I don't want to be that presumptuous, had Rip City, obviously a Blazers fan. So
I think it could just be a phenomenal troll. Like, you're paying money to troll
Blazer fans.
Oh, yeah, why not? I mean, it's more fun than just getting Lakers on like a regular Oregon license plate. Like, if you can rub it in a little bit more, maybe you do like a specific.
We can find out.
Can you look up the person?
Think you can. I think it has to be through DMV. I think there has to be a reason and probably a fee.
Yeah, because you do have to pay for both the license plate, the Portland one, and then whatever customization you want.
Oh, for example, if that person committed a crime and it was like there's only one Lakers in the whole state because you can't duplicate a license plate.
Sure.
So that person would actually, for the cops, be easy to find. I don't know about civilians. But if anybody knows the person who's got the Lakers, all we want is an explanation. Settle a bet.
If you work
dinner on me.
If you work at the DMV, look him up and then DM us the information, and we're going to go find him.
Just DM us.
Please.
All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go, bring in Eric. Eric, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, it's going well, Steve. Just to piggyback on Josh's call, I agree with him. The last few years, that's a no-brainer over. But anytime betting seems like a real slam dunk no-brainer, there's something to it. They've already adjusted that line, and I think what they're probably thinking about is how tough the West is, and the majority of Portland's games are against the West. And you think the Lakers are not going to be 3 or 4 easy wins this year like they were in the past. The Clippers are better.
Sure.
Utah's better. Denver's. So while we surpassed all those, and I think we're going to be a playoff team, and I think we always do get disrespected, I think they're looking at how strong the rest of the conference is, and they're looking at how much harder it is to win 50-plus games. So,
no, that's a good point. And I would imagine as we get closer to opening day and we know, and I appreciate the call, Eric, and we know the exact rosters, because there's, you know, I go to Basketball Reference and now they've updated. See, what happens is usually you bring up the page and it's got this season, the roster, the stats, and, you know, the schedule and the results. But now you could go to next season and you realize that, you know, the Blazers have 12 guys listed on their roster, but you don't know if they're all going to be on the roster when the season starts. They're, you know, Gary Trent and Anthony Tolliver and some of the others. The dude from Kentucky, Le Bissari. So
what we're seeing. To make a bet now, when you still, and if you go to certain franchises, like they've got 11 guys, they've got 10 guys. There's still moves to be made here. All right, what do you say we take a break? When we come back, more crunch time. Some sad news. The death of Pernell P. Whitaker. The news about Hall of Famer Bob Gibson. I want to talk about this piece in the USA Today about the SEC. So more crunch time rolls on next. 95.3, The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Here's your two. Swing and a line drive center field. That'll touch down for a hit. In to score is Bellinger. Bradley fires a strike into second. And the Dodgers have added another. It is now 6-4 on Verdugo's RBI single to center.
That was the breakup of a perfecto combined. It could have been history. You know, normally in the ninth inning of a no-hitter or a perfect game, there's a sense of, all right, let's settle in, see if we can. Oh, that's that. First pitch. Banged it right through the right side, right into the shift. And I actually hunkered down. I was like, yeah, got a couple minutes to kill. Plus, I had just come in from outside. And did anybody notice yesterday? It was like kind of a nice day, and then all of a sudden, about 5 o'clock, it got really, really hot. It's like got summer hot. But the near perfecto with the call there on the Tampa Bay TV network with Dave Wills and Andy Freed, as we welcome you back to Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score. I do want to talk about the accident that took the life of Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker. Who now he was another guy who the story broke late last week over the weekend. Dwight Gooden picked up again for cocaine possession. I had a buddy of mine who used to just refer to him as the demon cocaine, the demon alcohol, and some people just fall prey. And Gooden's only a couple of years younger than me, and still messing around with that crap just shows you the kind of grip. Wasn't there a little brouhaha between Gooden and Dwight Gooden and Daryl Strawberry some months ago about, one thing? Strawberry was a horrible person. There were rumors and an arrest for domestic violence during the 90s when those tragic wildfires hit Southern California. He actually was heard and said on record saying, I sold my property there, let it burn. Obviously had massive problems controlling his substance intake, but apparently he's cleaned up his life. But just, it's like with if you think about how many former athletes host radio shows, are on TV, our coaches, our analysts like Charles Barkley. But what is the percentage of the rest who, let's say you're a Seahawk fan and, you followed that team. And in, even in 2005, for the Sean Alexander and Hasselbeck, where he is, then every once in a while a guy will show up, sometimes for not, who got a Dewey. Who got in trouble, who maybe did something great, and you found out that they're now working for a company that sells nutritional products. But, with a guy like Gooden, his name has never shown up since he left, where you weren't like, uh-oh, what happened now? And anyway, the reason I brought that up is because P. Whitaker, there are many in the fight game who wonder what could have been if he stayed completely clean, because he fought in the 90s, and back then still Tyson and Holyfield and the middleweight and the welterweight and some of the lighter weight divisions. I feel like we used to get 3-4 good fights on pay-per-view a year and guys we knew. So he got hit by a car in Virginia Beach, and there's it happened about 10 o'clock. He was walking at an intersection, when the cops got on the scene, they found him there, and he died on the scene. And whoever was driving the vehicle remained there, and that's where he was born. He was a Norfolk kid. And I would say, aside from Mayweather, when you fought Whitaker, it was an exercise in you can't hit what you can't see, perpetual motion. I think the ESPN article by Dan Raphael mentioned him as one of the best defensive fighters in history. I mean, he used the word confounding, and he won 4 world titles. He was the undisputed unified lightweight and world champion. He also won welterweight, junior welter, and junior middleweight. And into the late 90s, 80s and 90s. I mean, first of all, he was part of, I'm going to say, our second greatest Olympic boxing team. The 76 team with the Spinks brothers and Sugar Ray and Howard Davis. I think they were more accomplished professionally. But that 84 team in L.A., Whitaker, I'll say the name and you guys can kind of nod along if you ever heard of him. Tyrell Biggs, who got a title shot, but the guy he fought for the title was a fella named Tyson. Henry Tillman. By the way, Henry Tillman, if they say timing in sports is everything, when would be the last time you ever would want to fight Tyson? How about after he lost to Buster Douglas? That's when Henry Tillman, he went down during the intros. Frank Tate was also on that team. Mark Breland, who I was actually familiar with because he was a Brooklyn kid who was year after year, a Golden Glover. They used to hold the bouts at the Garden. He would actually win a WBA welterweight title, but lose his first defense to Marlon Starling, if you remember him. Meldrick Taylor, who was a featherweight in the Olympics, had a very nice professional resume. But, if you follow the fight game back then, and I mentioned Julio Cesar Chavez and Meldrick Taylor, you were probably like, ugh, still aggravated. That was the last fight I watched as an East Coaster. They fought around, I just have a vision of it, St. Patrick's Day, right around the time of the tournament. And it was a monster. I mean, it was promoted. It was pay-per-view. God, I think back then, 29 years ago, we were springing for
$29.99. Wow!
Yeah, in shekels we had to pay.
It's a year's pay.
Back then in the early 90s?
Pretty sure that's how it worked, yeah.
So, and I know I'm getting completely off the subject of Pernell Whitaker, but whenever this fight comes up, I just get pissed. So, Taylor had the upper hand easy. He was taking the fight to Chavez, and all he had to do in the final round is survive. And with about 18 seconds to go, Chavez dropped him. He got up. He beat the 10 count. But the referee, I think it had to be Richard. There was Mills Lane and Richard Steele who were the refs for like every fight on pay-per-view in Vegas in the 80s and 90s. And so he gets up at about 6, beats the count. Steele says to him, "Are you okay?" And he doesn't answer. And he called it. He was ahead. You know, with the 10-point must system, he was ahead like 114, 110. All he had to do was not get knocked out. And Steele called the fight with 2 seconds to go. So he got up. And if you ever, I'm assuming you could YouTube it. And I'm going pretty much from memory here. So Steele says something along, could you go or are you okay? And Taylor doesn't respond, but he looks at his corner and, you know, the ref in that case, he can't put him back out there and he's not keeping time. If there's eight, you know, a guy can get killed if he's out. If a pro boxer hits him three more times in the last 8 seconds, I mean, that's the job of the ref. But that fight did him in. He was never the same. He tried to get a rematch with Chavez, but first he had to square off with one of the top contenders, Terry Norris, and he got knocked out early and he never reached any kind of heights again. But, you know, in the case of P. Whitaker, part of that amazing Olympic team, and he dies like that. And he fought De La Hoya. And I remember the posters for the fight were up, a lot of the bars. It was just called Pound for Pound because you'll always hear that. Whitaker, one of the greatest pound for pound fighters. Golden Boy, certainly in that conversation. And I'll tell you, I remember when the fight was over and they read, you know, the decisions, you're like, okay, but. I went back on BoxRec.com. You know, the 10-point must system means every round the winner gets 10 points, the loser gets 9 points, and, you know, if there's a low blow or, you know, they could take a point away for this and that. And so we figured, I remember the guys I was watching it with, it was like, Whitaker's got to win this one. It's going to be close. It might go to a unanimous or a split decision, but on the cards, but it was amazing. And I remember the Las Vegas Review took a poll of the writers covering the fight because it was at the Thomas and Mack Center. 14 had P. Whitaker winning, 11 De La Hoya and one draw. But here's the scoring on it was 115-111, 116-110, and 116-110. I mean, it was like they were watching a different fight, the judges, than most of us were. But the passing of P. Whitaker. I know we don't talk a lot of boxing, although Pac-Man is fighting this weekend. And how the hell old is Manny Pacquiao now?
Just about to guess.
Yeah, is he 38, 39?
Hold on.
Anyway, it's just the one time boxing comes up. It's when one of the all-time great champs dies.
He's 40.
Oh, really?
He turns 41 in December, so he's 40 and a half years old. Actually, 2 days is his half birthday. He was born in December, so his half birthday's in June. So he's already 40 and a half.
I'll be perfectly honest. Keith Thurman, the dude he's fighting. And this is for the WBA Super World Welterweight title. I didn't even realize Pacquiao fought earlier this year. It was at Vegas, unanimous decision. I don't know much about Keith Thurman. I know he's unbeaten. I was just, from what I was listening to yesterday, he fought Danny Garcia a couple of years ago, so he's got that on his resume. Beat him at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. What?
If you had to describe Manny Pacquiao in like a little phrase to put under his Wikipedia bio, what would it be? Would it be
tenacious?
Yeah, like world boxing champion, yeah. You know, something like that. Well, Manny Pacquiao on Google, it's Senator of the Philippines.
What else?
Of course, because that's the one thing people think of when they think of Manny Pacquiao.
Well, a couple of you just texted me and said it should be a good fight, that Thurman is a highly touted welterweight. So there you go. The official stamp of approval from our listening audience. All right, that brings us to break time. It is a Monday. It is crunch time, which means we'll take a break and return and wrap up with the Richter scale next. 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
To Alberto to the right side, and it's going to get through. One pitch,
And the perfect game and the no-hitter are gone. What a bummer.
You're not kidding. And at the hands of Hanser Alberto.
Yeah. The eight innings of perfection by two pitchers went up in smoke on one fell swoop as we welcome you back to Crunch Time. 95-3 the score, the return. Been off since our Wednesday show, July 3rd. Got out, played some golf. Did a lot of nothing, which is always fun on a vacation. And I still have to find time to squeeze in another week's vacation. When should that be? Middle of August.
Oh, no. End of the year. End of the year.
No, I've got to. I still have another one. I still have another week.
I'm saying save it for, like, you know, after the Christmas, New Year's.
No, week. No. I mean, I've got. I will
You've
have.
You've got two more weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. You should have used it months ago. You should have used it, you know, after.
I probably should have thought.
After March
it.
Madness. You know, break your year up into, like, thirds, you know?
Now, I've got to. If I don't get to the coast once a year, I get even more neurotic than I usually am. But with that thought in mind, because it's Monday, because it's crunch time, because it's the final segment, what do you say we do? Well, this.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Run away!
Sounds kind of good, doesn't it?
Other people want it. It must be good.
So it's bad. How bad?
Oh my God, that's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Dr. Nick. I remember.
There you go. Welcome to the Richter Scale. It's how we wrap up Crunch Time on a Monday by talking about the weekend that was. To many, sports are an escape from the real world, and plenty of real-world stresses can be melted away during 3 hours at the ballpark or an evening on the couch watching sports. Other times, they collide together and become they aren't a place to escape anymore. And that's what happened to the Angels before the All-Star break when Tyler Skaggs tragically passed away in his hotel room at only 27 years old. Mike Trout wore his 45 during the All-Star game to honor him, and the Angels in their first home game after the break, the entire Anaheim squad wore number 45, and the pitching staff threw a no-hitter. Mike Trout went on to say post-game that they scored 7 runs in the first. They finished with 13. 7-13 is Tyler's birthday. 7-13-91 was Tyler's birthday. The year he was born, it was also the last time that there was a combined no-hitter thrown in California. The team laid out their 45 jerseys on the mound. There was a big 45 on the back of the mound. They had a big memorial for him on the wall in center field. And if you're not moved by any of this, you're an alien. Go back to your alien beings with your heartless alien friends. How beautiful of a moment was this on Friday night?
It was unbelievable. If that, all I could say is, if they did that in a TV show or a movie, you'd be like, I think they might be taking some license there. But the fact that it happened, just the outpouring of emotion and just to see the reaction of Trout was awesome. That was the 10.
Yeah. Novak Djokovic won his 16th Grand Slam title by winning his second straight Wimbledon title at the All England Lawn and Tennis Cricket and Croquet Club with an epic 5-set final against Roger Federer. The Joker won 7-6, 1-6, 7-6, 4-6, and then 13-12 in a marathon of a final that lasted nearly 5 hours. 5 hours of tennis! The new tiebreaker rule was introduced for the 5th set as well to avoid a Isner-Mahut matchup in 2010 that finished the 5th set 70-68 and was a match that took 11 hours and 3 days to finish. As I said, the 16th major championship for Joker, only behind Nadal and Federer, who have 18 and 20 respectively. Novak's only 32 with plenty of more great years of tennis ahead of him. How great of a Wimbledon final was that on Sunday?
That was unbelievable. I think I watched at least 40 minutes 3 different times. I got the lawn cut. I went to the store and came back. I'm not kidding. I got a lot done.
In shorts.
Yep. No, that's epic. You've got two of maybe the greatest 5 players ever. When it comes to slams, like you said, 2 of the 3 best ever. Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm a big major tennis fan. I'm giving that a 10 as well.
We're about 50 days away from the start of the NFL season, which means it's time to start putting on the sunscreen, inflating your inflatable swans, donuts, floaties, wiping the cobwebs off the patio furniture, because we're getting ready to cannonball into football season. The big event in the NFL this week is the deadline for teams to sign players on the franchise franchise tag onto long-term deals. Three major names have been the focus of NFL insiders: Jadeveon Clowney of the Texans, Grady Jarrett of my Fail Clowns, and the 49ers, Robbie Gould. That's right, a kicker is trying his hand at this new player empowerment movement in the NFL. A kicker. He's trying to go full Le'Veon. Well, it turns out the 49ers have reached a deal with Gould, giving him $10.5 million over the next 2 years. This makes Gould the second highest paid kicker on a per year salary. And this last part has nothing to do with what I've been talking about so far, but it needs to be mentioned. The Rams are paying Johnny Hecker $21 million over 6 seasons. He's a punter. What is going on here? How big of a deal is it that the 49ers are signing Robbie Gould to an extension?
By the way, you think the Bears wish they maybe kept him around for last year? What's he going to be, 37?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
He was the most accurate kicker in the NFL last year. And, you know, a kicker, 37, 38, that's nothing. We saw Janikowski and those guys. Vinatieri's going to kick till he's about 70. So, yeah, it's a big deal. If they're back and healthy, I don't know if they're going to contend in the West, but we've seen what having a kicker you can't rely on can do. So I'm going to call that a 7.
Hey, Papa!
The MLB trade deadline is coming closer, and teams are starting to decide if they're going to be buyers or a seller, and two moves were made this weekend that were trades. That's about all I can really say about them. The Red Sox took the only major league quality player from the Baltimore Orioles, and Andrew Cashner, and the A's traded for Homer Bailey of the Royals. The A's, who would be in the playoffs if they ended today, added Bailey, who has a 4.8 ERA, but the A's need some pitching and don't give up too much to add to their rotation. Cashner, however, is having one of his best seasons in the majors so far. The Red Sox are very much in the hunt for the AL wild card, if not making a run at the division. 2.5 back of the A's for that second wild card spot, but 10 behind the Yankees. How big of an impact will these two trades have on the AL playoff push?
Man, Homer Bailey over the last, I think this is his best ERA at 4.8 since 2014. If they want a guy to eat up some innings, you know, pitch a Thursday, pitch a Monday, that's okay. You know, with we talk about the dude who came over from Baltimore, that's just an addition. I don't think it's going to be major impactful. I think it'll kind of get lost in the mix. Let's give that a 4. All right. Yeah, Homer Bailey, when he first got drafted by the Reds, he was the 7th overall pick. I mean, he was going to be a big deal. And you got to go back to 04 when, you know, I always like to see who went after him. And, you know, Verlander went before him. Neil Walker after him, Jared Weaver after him, Stephen Drew, who never really panned out. So, you know, he's had a Phil Hughes of the Yankees, had a very so-so career. All right, that's a wrap. We'll be back. The 4 o'clock hour is next. Sports Talk coming at you, 95.3 The Score.
Playoffs?